It is Election Day across the nation. 34 Senate seats, all 435 House seats, and 36 governorships are at stake in this midterm election. Polls have already closed in several eastern states, while in many others there are less than 30 minutes of voting left. We go now to NPR's election headquarters, where my colleagues Robert Siegel and Linda Wertheimer are preparing for a long evening of tracking the races.
Thank you, John. I'm here in NPR's election headquarters with Linda Wertheimer, and we will cover election 2002 until 12 midnight Eastern Time. Our colleagues Scott Simon and Neil Conan are in Los Angeles, and they'll be with you after 12 midnight Eastern. That's after 9 p.m. Pacific. As John just said, the polls have closed in several states. Linda, there are some races where there was so little contest and the voting's now over. We can see who's won.
In Virginia, Senator John Warner, who had no Democratic opponent, has won. He is the senior man on the Armed Services Committee, and if the Republicans recapture the Senate, he will be the chairman. In Kentucky, Senator Mitch McConnell has been reelected. This will be his fourth term. He is expected to join the leadership to be number two to Trent Lott, who is the minority leader. He is an opponent of campaign finance reform. Now, we still have not had results from some of the states where polls are closed, including North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, and West Virginia.
And in several of those states, there are very close races for the Senate as well as some other contests. We turn now to NPR's Mara Liasson to talk about the big picture on this election night. Mara, what's at stake today?
Oh, well, what's at stake is a lot. What's at stake is control of the House and Senate, for starters, and by extrapolation, control of the Supreme Court, because whoever controls the Senate will be able to approve or not approve justices. But I think that this has been an extraordinary election. First of all, it's very murky, and we're flying even blinder than usual, as you know.
We should
already discussed that we don't have exit
polls. Benefit
of
exit polls, or some listeners may think we're out without the hindrance of exit polls.
Yes, without the hindrance of exit polls, and I'm sure some people might be, raising a cheer because exit polls got us all into a lot of trouble in 2000, but now we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, which is actually report the results, not the projections, which means that everything will take a lot longer. We also have the extraordinary situation of Minnesota, where Paul Wellstone was killed in a plane crash just days before the election, and they are using paper ballots because they had to reprint them with former Vice President Walter Mondale's name on them, and they have to be counted by hand, which also will mean it'll take longer. So we've got Son of 2000 here, possibly. But I think that the overall theme of this election is parity. We learned this in 2000. This is a country that's absolutely split down the middle, so I guess it should be no surprise to us that a lot of these races are so close that we've been unable to predict them or to get a good sense of which way the Senate's going to go. We still have five or six too close to call Senate races, and we'll be watching them carefully.
As you've pointed out, we will probably be waiting on a slow vote count in Minnesota, perhaps well after our broadcast from Washington, and our colleagues in Los Angeles will be on hand for that one. But also there's a question in Louisiana where they have their own rules for elections.
That's right.
And Senator Mary Landrieu is up for re-election.
That's right, and she must get over 50% to be the winner in this round. If she doesn't, there will be a runoff on December 7th, and she is now facing three or four Republicans. Of course, what the Republicans are hoping is if she doesn't get over 50, there will be just one opponent for her, and they'll coalesce around that opponent. But the Democrats poured a lot of money into that race at the end. They are desperate to avoid a runoff. Now, of course, if the Senate splits evenly and Mary Landrieu is the deciding factor, I can assure you that every political reporter in the country will be camped out in New Orleans for the next several weeks.
Including, no doubt, our own Mara Liasson.
Yes, absolutely.
Been talking with us. And Linda, we celebrated on All Things Considered not too long ago the virtues of slow cooking, slow food. Tonight, slow news.
That's right. That's right. And I must say that having to spend a month in New Orleans is not the worst thing I ever heard of. NPR's Adam Hochberg joins us now from the Salisbury Historic Train Depot in Salisbury, North Carolina. He is at Elizabeth Dole's Senate campaign headquarters, and this is one of the close races that we're watching with great interest. Adam?
Good evening.
Adam, have you heard anything there to give you any sort of indication of what's going on? We were hearing in the closing days of this race leading up to Election Day that Erskine Bowles, who was a former chief of staff of President Clinton, was beginning to catch up to Ms. Dole's long-held lead, had closed the gap, in fact.
Well, that's what some of the pre-election polls were saying. When this race first got underway and really through the mid and late summer, Mrs. Dole had a double-digit lead. According to some of the pollsters, Erskine Bowles had closed that to 5, 6, 7 points in the last couple weeks before the election. But we should hasten to add that there was no poll that ever showed Mr. Bowles ahead. So at this point, the question is whether Mrs. Dole is able to hold on to that lead that was so large and has gotten smaller, and we'll see what it is today.
Well, now, what could have happened to her to have caused her big double-digit lead to start to collapse? She ran, by all accounts, a very careful, very disciplined campaign. She was, as far as I know, she made no mistakes.
What happened to her was money. This was the most expensive Senate race in the country, and Erskine Bowles just saturated the airways with ads, some of them positive ads, but a lot of them negative ads, questioning Mrs. Dole's commitment to Social Security, questioning her record on education, questioning her stance on a number of issues. Just a saturation campaign. You could not turn on TV for more than 5 minutes, it seems, and not see some of the ads from Erskine Bowles and then also the response ads from Mrs. Dole. And it was a perception of many of us who've been following the race in North Carolina that he did succeed in putting her on the defensive in the last few weeks of the campaign, that she was spending most of her time answering his attacks.
Thanks very much, Adam. We'll check back with you during the course of the evening to see what happens in the campaign of Elizabeth Dole versus Erskine Bowles.
The polls are still open at least for another quarter of an hour in Florida, where there's a very interesting gubernatorial race this year. NPR's Philip Davis joins us now from the Renaissance Biscayne Bay Hotel in Miami. He's at Jeb Bush Gubernatorial Campaign Headquarters. And the president's brother's reelection campaign has been of enormous interest to the president, Philip.
Exactly. That's exactly right here. The president has made several trips down to Florida, though during the campaign, both sides said that this campaign was going to center around local issues of intense interest, such as school class sizes or a state-funded prescription drug benefit for seniors. It was also looked upon in many places as sort of a referendum on the Bush administration, and that's why the president came down here so many times to support his brother. Last time was just a few days ago to a huge rally in Tampa.
Now, you should explain that one of the referenda this year on the ballot in Florida would actually mandate smaller classroom sizes, and I guess that's been one of the subjects of contention between Governor Bush and his opponent, Democrat McBride.
Exactly. Education has been the number one topic here. A lot of people think of Florida as a state where retirees come down and spend their golden years, and that's true, but it's got a really fast-growing population of young adults, young families, and Florida schools are growing very quickly, and there's been real problems here with overcrowding in classrooms. One state senator decided to take the bull by the horns and put an amendment in the state constitution, which people are voting on today, to limit class sizes. However, no one has really discussed in detail how much that is going to cost. McBride has long supported smaller classrooms, but the issue sort of came back to haunt him during the second debate when he was asked how he would pay for constructing 30,000 new classrooms, and he was a little bit fuzzy on the answers, and that, many people think, robbed him of some of his momentum coming into this election.
Okay, Philip, we'll be hearing from you, I'm sure, lots later on. And Paris,
sure,
Philip Davis,
thanks
talking
a lot
to us from Miami. He's covering the Jeb Bush campaign for reelection. Linda?
Senator John Edwards, the Democratic senator from North Carolina, joins us now from Raleigh. Senator Edwards, thanks very much for speaking to us tonight.
I'm happy to be with you, Linda.
I wonder if how it looks to you from your vantage point for Democrats in the South. After a couple of pretty good years for Democrats, there's a fair amount at risk down there this year.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of close elections. I've been spent the last week or so traveling with Erskine Bowles all over the state, campaigning with him. It is pretty clear to me that he's had some momentum and has had the wind at his back, I think, because of some of the issues that you all talked about earlier, the issue of privatization of Social Security, the issue of vouchers for public schools. Some of those issues have really gotten traction here in North Carolina, and I think as a result he's got some momentum. I think the question for him is, will he have run out of time? But he's done awfully well recently. I've seen an enormous amount of enthusiasm for him. In the other races, I know that there's the close gubernatorial races in Georgia and in South Carolina, for example.
In Alabama.
In Alabama, Tulsa. Senate race in Georgia with Max Cleland, I'm told, is relatively close. So I think the reality is it's just the nature of politics in the South. You know, we Democrats, in order to be successful in the South, we have to run good campaigns and have good candidates. And even when we win by small margins.
Democrats in the South have to, in order to win, bring out all of those people who don't necessarily always vote. And that one group of people that that the Democrats always look to pull out are black voters. I understand that that's been one of your assignments with the for the Democratic Party in the southern states, in your neighboring state of South Carolina as well as in North Carolina.
Well, I have done everything I can to make sure that those in the African-American community understand the importance of the election, the positions that the Democratic candidates are taking that that could affect their daily lives.
How do you do that?
Through radio interviews, through radio advertisements, through appearances, both in North and South Carolina at various events. I mean, it's just a matter of getting the message out through whatever medium's available.
Senator, your neighboring state of South Carolina is one of the early primary states. You've certainly introduced yourself to quite a few people in that state during this season. Could that possibly be helpful to you in 2004?
I think the most helpful thing for me or for anybody who decides to run for president in 2004 is to get a Democratic governor elected in South Carolina, a Democratic senator elected in North Carolina, to keep a Democratic governor in Georgia and a Democratic senator in Georgia. I think those are the things that make the most difference, having people at leadership levels who can help us as we move forward with the national race.
Help to pull out that elusive vote, huh?
Absolutely.
Senator, thank you very much for talking to us.
Happy to be with you, Linda.
Senator John Edwards, he's a Democratic senator from North Carolina. He spoke to us from Raleigh.
Let's recap and look ahead a little bit. First of all, in the races where it really is all over but the counting, Virginia Republican Senator John Warner, who had no major party opposition, is obviously going to be elected to another term. And Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, another Republican incumbent, who didn't face very strong opposition, appears en route to another term in the Senate.